All right.
Everybody, take it outside. Hey, Tom, go inside. Hey, Tom. Hey, Tom. Tom, go outside, Tom.
I can't hear you. I'm outside.
Put your mask on. Diving into the news.
It's a great week to be outside, John.
I can't hear you. I got a mask in my ear.
All right. Yes, it is, Tom. It's going to feel like up in the 80s out here in the clump. Okay.
Wow.
Lots of news. So is the governor? I didn't see it. I couldn't see it. Aaron was the governor. I don't even know if Aaron's in
the
room.
I'm right here. What's up?
Was the governor outside?
He was outside. He was outside the governor's mansion.
Was he double masking? He sounds even more masked up than he normally does.
He did have a mask on, and he had a big banner behind him. It said, "Take it outside." It's a beautiful day for it. So, yeah, it makes sense.
Yes, it does. All right. Thank you, Ryan.
You got it.
It's the know-it-all quiz day. Normally it was on Friday, but we found too many of our listeners were drunk, so we've moved it to Thursday. So if it is your want, that's for the what are you playing for again this week? I can't remember, Jacob.
Once again, a Kyber Radio prize pack, which our promotions department is emphatic that listeners actually appreciate, even though we seem to make fun of it every week.
Got it. Standardized testing for the state of Washington students will be delayed until 2021. This is the big story that we lead with, which is apparently
until the fall.
Either going to be to the fall. Either they thought it was going to be too hard to get the whole thing organized, or the fact that the kids didn't learn anything. So don't test them on this one, because this one is not going to help reflect how well we did teaching them this year.
Well, actually, it's going to be a worse reflection than maybe, John, because they are going to test them, but they're going to test them after they've had however you would describe this particular educational year, but they will not be testing them in the spring like they normally do. They will be testing them in the fall. So that's either a good sign or a bad sign, because that means over the summer, all the students can study up extra hard and do well in the fall. Not likely to happen. But that's sort of the compromise. This has to be, every state has to get approval from the feds for their testing system. And they were going to pitch to them. They said, how about we just test a representative sample of kids? Because we don't want to disrupt all whatever tens of thousands of kids that we have. So we'll just do kind of a representative sampling to get a sense of how well they learned or didn't learn. And the feds said, yeah, they hadn't officially rejected it, but says, nah, I don't really think that's a good idea. So this is sort of the compromise they've come up with, that they're going to do it in the fall. And the one silver lining to this, because this may be a fiasco all the way around, but the one silver lining they said is a lot of researchers are going to be interested in finding out what stays with them and what was learned after this year of a pandemic. And because of that, this will provide, even if it's bad news, it'll provide some solid research material about what was remembered and what wasn't.
Yeah. Not every state. Nebraska has been able to get themselves away from having the federal government. They said, we're better off determining what our kids know. Let us come up with our own. So they have. Maine is trying to do that as well. Others are trying to break away. I looked into it. I saw a great piece in the Washington Post. There are four major corporations that provide these tests, and it costs each state about $1 billion, $665 million to administer these tests. Those companies, those corporations lobby the education department heavily to keep these tests in place, and the federal government basically forces the states to do these tests. If they got rid of those tests, those standardized tests, in order to have the federal government be happy with the result, and you gave that money to the teachers directly, it would account for maybe an additional $1,000 on top of their salaries, rather than spending it per child. The highest is $114 per student in Washington, D.C. It's high as well in Hawaii. I couldn't find what it costs each student important to be tested in the state of Washington. But if they were to break away and say to the four corporations that spend more than $20 million lobbying the Department of Education, we're going to do it on our own like Nebraska and Maine does, and let it stay local, let the teachers figure it out because they know who's doing well and not doing well, that'd be better than having to kowtow to the federal government, which is, if you don't do these tests, we won't give you federal dollars. The state should be able to push back and say, you know what? We'll give up on the federal dollars rather than having to have the four tests or the four different corporations that give you money, Mr. Senator and Mrs. Senator, in order to force these tests down our throat.
Okay, that's an interesting theory. I don't know that the tests came about, though, because of the public's demand for accountability. When I was going to school, we weren't taking, remember about maybe 20 years ago or so, I was at Cairo at the time, there were these WASL tests, Washington, yeah. You know, whatever. And there's always controversy about those, but they arise because they want to have a sense of, is everybody getting educated at the same level? Is it, you know, legitimate across the board? And that was kind of like, yeah. Well, there was a return to the, you know, a reading, writing, arithmetic, coming, yeah, the basics and all this kind of stuff that
yeah.
I think the
yeah.
standardized tests were pushed as a way for accountability. Now, I don't know enough about these particular test systems, if they've now been in power long enough that you think they've somehow corrupted the system. But I think the initial spur for them was to kind of reassure people that if I'm getting educated in Renton or Vancouver, Washington or Aberdeen, that we'll have a consistent kind of standard by which we're all being judged. So it came from a good place, at least. I don't know if it's been corrupted or not yet.
Well, let's assume if all things become corrupted, it's about a $2 billion business annually in order for the four corporations to be able to provide the tests so that they test it on these kids. What I'd say is that the schools themselves, the teachers themselves, know best of who's doing well and who's not doing well. And if the parents are involved and if the school board's involved, you could keep it local as opposed to just handing out these tests. There are more and more of these teachers and more of these school districts across the United States that are intentionally holding their kids back and not taking the tests, right? I think in certain school districts, the parents will say, you know what, you're not going in for that test. We're not going to send you in. In San Francisco, I think a couple of organizations, school districts or parents organizations have pulled the kids out and said, you know what, we're just not going to send you in on those days when you take those tests because they don't get graded on them. It doesn't affect the kids' score at all overall, and it's sort of a way of people wanting to have more control locally as opposed to kowtowing to the federal government. Prior to 1978, there was no Department of Education. I don't know how. Oh, that's right. It was Jimmy Carter that turned around and said to the National Education Association, to the teachers' union, I'll tell you what I'll do for you. We'll put in a Department of Education. But prior to that, I don't know how kids got educated without the federal government. But this is just one more way.
Well, demand for standards, John.
Oh, yeah, right. Because prior to that, Tom, the federal government has done such a great job educating kids from 78 on. No, standards of what? Who would know better? Doesn't the teacher know? Well, doesn't the school board know? Don't the parents know? Isn't the standard by which... here's the other crazy thing. Each state is different and scores them differently. So a standard by what standard? Because in some schools, within 70%, others 65%. It's completely...
Within the state.
None of it is across the board. None of it's across the
board. No, but there is there's individuality allowed within each of the states. They just have to get this official approval. But every state has a slightly different plan. The key is that everybody within that particular state, they're supposed to be this consistent level. It's just like we demand, I think in Washington State, don't we have to take Washington State history? There are certain requirements that everybody has to, come from. And it's not at the federal level. It's at the state level that they want to, they just want to kind of guarantee, like a bottom line, if you graduate from high school, you should be able to do math, long division, maybe a little, trigonometry or something. I mean, there are these certain standards, and I think that's what these things are coming out of. I'm more interested. I mean, you've come up with an entire kind of a takedown of the industry. I don't know enough about the testing industry to know if that's corrupt or not. But the interesting thing for us here, in spite of that or whatever, is that how will these tests compare to the years before in this particular state, given the pandemic? Because we've had one huge social experiment in education, and there are a lot of questions about how successful or unsuccessful it was. It'll be interesting to compare tests done in the fall, 3 months after the last day of class, which was mostly done remotely, how those scores are going to measure up to, say, 2019 in this particular state. It's a good measurement. That's all.
I would assume quite poorly, considering there was really little or no education happening. But we paid all the teachers. Why seniors are getting so many more college rejections this year, I assume it's because, according to Slate, more kids are applying. There's more of them have been more involved. And as they fire out more applications, there's more possible chances for rejections. Plus, also, I think a lot of these colleges have gotten rid of the SATs and the ACT
yes.
tests. And they're starting to judge them differently and rate them differently.
Did you say rate them differently?
Rate.
Yeah, okay, good. That's not good. So in this particular case, all these are factors. They said that since kids had more time on their hands, since they weren't doing all these school activities like sports and theater and that kind of stuff, The suspicion here is that a lot more students had a lot more time to apply to a lot more colleges. And when you drop those kinds of scores that would immediately knock most of us out, you won't even get a glance at Harvard or Yale or some Ivy League school or something like that. Well, heck, they don't know how bad my SAT score might have been. So I can apply based on, you know, how well I did in high school or what my letters of recommendation say and all that. So a lot more schools were getting applied to that probably normally wouldn't get applied to. And that's part of the thrust. Another interesting thing is, and they say the numbers, schools, universities are really, they're not transparent when it comes to how they admit people and how they exclude people and how many apply and all this. But Yale, for instance, did in some document, this article highlights, said that they did allow for 300, and I don't know what the typical freshman class is, but they did allow for 300 Yale incoming freshmen from last year to take a gap year, and they can come back and be freshmen now this year in fall of 2021. But they did claim that that wasn't reducing the number of people they were allowing to come to Yale as freshmen this year. So you'd have a double, you know, or a much bigger size freshman-level class at Yale. But that's sort of what the discussion is. By the way, if you're thinking about getting into Duke normally only lets in 6% of admissions. Because of all these extra admissions, they're only allowing 4% of people getting in. So it doesn't improve your chances of getting in. It doesn't improve your chance of getting rejected by some of the finest universities in the land.
I made a rule to myself. I was only going to apply to any place where the application fee was $15 or less.
Now, back in the day, postage costs more than that now.
It narrowed my choices. But I remember Indiana University of Pennsylvania, crazy name, Indiana University of Pennsylvania, it was $25. And I'm like, all right, okay, I'll send one to Indiana University of Pennsylvania. Or is it the Miami or something of Ohio, like Miami University of Ohio? It was this. Mm-hmm. I'm like, wow, that's kind of, am I in Florida or am I in Ohio?
That was
part of the application. That was part of the application.
Application to figure out where are we? Where's our main campus?
What state am I in? All righty. Well, good for all you kids. Good luck. Hopefully get in there and waste your parents' money and get out and then spend a couple of years living in the basement. Daryl Chauvin, the police officer in Minneapolis charged with second degree, is not going to take the stand. People kind of knew that was going to happen. He pleads the fifth on this, and they wrap everything up. But the jury will be sequestered, I think it was on Friday. The judge is going to let everything kind of, that's going to be the end of it. And the sequestering begins over the weekend.
On Monday, they're going to have closing arguments, John.
Closing arguments, but Friday they're going to, that's it. They're going to, you know, not allowed to go out, can't go do anything.
Monday.
Everybody gets out. And it seems like the best I'd seen a piece today that they had really stumbled. The defense had been stumbling. They brought one guy in there to talk about excessive force, and they thought that this guy would be terrific. He ended up really burying the defense. And it wasn't until they brought this one guy in from South Africa. He's a doctor. He's got all sorts of stuff. He studied at Hopkins. And he said, listen, the problem being that Mr. Floyd had a variety of factors going into it. Into the situation, and you have to, there just to be enough doubt as far as the defense is concerned for the jury. Did the officer and then all the combination of all the other things included, can you still say that the police officer had excessive force and had no regard for Mr. Floyd while on the ground and put enough doubt in the juror's mind as to the position of the officer and whether or not Mr. Floyd's medical condition should also be considered? And that's the one piece that I had seen, because they said that for the last 3 or 4 days, the defense has really not been doing well for the police officer being charged with the death of George Floyd. Have you followed any of those big twists and turns?
It's ongoing all day, so I don't really have time. But I do watch like the NBC News or whatever, and they just sort of do recaps. And it sounded to me like, so the reason this is ending up relatively a quick trial, that the prosecution had a lot more people. They had like, in fact, somebody said it could backfire on them, but they had like 7 or 8 different police officers saying this wasn't legitimate police action, that it was one after the other. They also had a lot of medical doctors responding, this couldn't be just arrhythmia, it's not because of the drugs, it's not this. They had a lot of people. The defense did a much more surgical kind of strike. They tried to hit just with one good witness each time to raise doubts, because they only have to get one juror to raise the doubt to prevent a conviction. So it's kind of hard to say. One, the prosecution was, you know, like 8 days long, and the defense was 2 days long, and so it's kind of hard to gauge. The one thing, there was the thing that happened yesterday, the doctor that you said we don't know what the cause of death was. Just know there's Fowler, there's so many factors involved that you can't pinpoint just one. But he was the one who suggested carbon monoxide. So today the prosecution tried to introduce more information about the carbon monoxide, and the judge said no, that would prejudice the jury. You knew that this is a possibility. You saw Dr. Fowler's testimony since February, so we're going to let we're not going to let you reintroduce or introduce new information.
Right.
So what
they
did is they did have one rebuttal witness. The prosecution did, another doctor dismissing the carbon monoxide as not being significant. We'll see if that turns out to be a significant factor or not.
Yeah, the guy that did the autopsy for the county, he said, look, it's all of these factors. Now, if you can't add them all up and say this is what killed him, you can just say these are all the contributing factors to the death of George Floyd. It's complicated. I thought the thing about the carbon monoxide, no one had brought that up. But while he was laying there, the engine of the car was still running, and that was sort of part of the whole thing. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. I still stand by mine that Black Lives Matter would like to see the officer not charged, so they can have a reason to continue to raise funds.
You are so cynical.
Around the world. Yep, I am. Tracy Taylor, look at traffic. All righty, Keel Mortgage. All right, everybody. Keel Mortgage is the one to call. I can tell you right now that Laura Keel and the team that she has working for her, best in the business. They're probably working from home still, I'm assuming, but you get outstanding customer service. You get the feeling that, am I the only customer? You were so fast returning emails, phone calls. It's Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. Best in the business. Get yourself a pre-approval letter or head on out and get yourself a refinancing, get the mortgage. By the way, interest rates are going up. I saw today that the Dow has hit a new record, that the economy is just on fire. This is just from the latest labor numbers that are coming out, with people being hired and everything going on. A pretty good chance that mortgage rates will still continue to climb up. So cash that in, 1-888-778-KIEL. See that, Tom, that the stocks are just going nuts, nuts, nuts? It's good news.
Yeah, it is good news. Thank you, Joe.
What'd Joe do? Dow tops 34,000 on the strong economic data.
Thanks for that 1.9 $1 trillion stimulus package.
That's what
you always gave Donald credit, so I thought I'd hit you back by giving Joe credit.
I will say that I have seen lots of studies that show that the stock market normally does better when you have a Democrat in the White House than a Republican. And I'm always like, well, really? Blah. And I look at him like, oh, okay. Statistically speaking, that tends to often be the case. So that's good, yeah. But, yeah, the numbers are wild. So if everybody's in the stock market, 50% of Americans are, you're reaping the benefit of us spending money that we don't have. Eventually, somebody has to pay the bill. So we'll see how that goes. The it will be a nightmare for one some. It's Tom, and there's your segue into the story that Jacob felt was so interesting. You ever met a guy that's under the age of 30 that cares more about sleep and dreams and napping than Jacob? He's like a large old dog or something like that. Constantly. How about this story about naps? How about this story about dreams? How about this story about sleep? How about we not getting enough sleep? I'm like, you're 25 years old. Come on. Live like Governor Inslee would say.
Take it outside.
He's into altered states of consciousness. That's what I think.
Jake, that's what it is.
There you go. Okay. And so this idea about dreams. It's probably no huge revelation that nightmares can be good things. This is an example of a bunch of a sleep study that said that if you have nightmares, is that reason to be concerned or not concerned? And they mentioned that in times of stress, and they mentioned they did a study of 10 to 12-year-olds living in the Gaza Strip, you know, so they're living under constant stress, kind of chronic stress. For a lot of people, the pandemic this past year has been a life of chronic stress. And because of that, you tend to have more bad dreams, more nightmares. Mm-hmm. So this is an examination of, is this a problem or not? And the ultimate thrust, there's a lot of fascinating little details in here, but the ultimate thrust is that nightmares serve a couple of functions. One is, it lets you, what happens in sleep is that we process our memories of the day and sort of like file them away. And as we do that, if there was something that had emotional resonance or was really bothering you, that a dream and obviously a nightmare if it gets extremely negative is the way of trying to strip an emotionally powerful happenstance or thought, strip it of its emotional power. So in some ways, you're sort of saying, okay, that happened. Now I'm going to try to take away the nightmare part of it. Will be me exercising my demons. And then once I get through that nightmare, then I'll be okay. The other version of this is, I don't need to dominate the conversation here, but just to get to the other.
I'll tell you how you can make yourself have a nightmare.
Okay. Well, that's good. Listen to the Tom and Curly show, right?
Yeah.
So the other thing they say is it also, if you're having anxiety, which is happens under stressful situations, it's a way for your brain to kind of help process what you're most anxious for. So if you have a big meeting with the boss, say tomorrow, they said, you can kind of anticipate your fears, your anxieties about having that meeting. If you can process them through nightmares in your own, dream processes, you'll be more relaxed. And dreams and nightmares allow you to regulate your emotions more effectively. And that's all good and true, unless it's chronic. If you have chronic nightmares, if you have like 4 or 5 nightmares a week, that's a problem. But if it's just the occasional nightmare, then that's actually your body and your dream life working at its best.
Sleep on your stomach.
Okay.
Eat certain foods before going to bed. Spicy or salty.
Okay.
What are you laughing at? Try to scare yourself just before going to bed. Watch something online. See something that's upsetting to you. And then quickly throw yourself down onto the bed, onto your stomach. Consider taking vitamin B6. That apparently has something to do with it. Jacob's probably already have all these things. Melatonin also helps as well. But overall, they say that those are the studies that say that for people that would like to induce a nightmare, those types of things happen. What? I certainly would watch. You know, I didn't mean to watch this thing yesterday, and I put my finger over the screen. I was slipping through some stuff before going to bed. I'm listening to East of Eden. Oh, my God, what a beautiful
Steinbeck
book.
Yeah.
Steinbeck. And I stopped for a moment. I was looking at something. I was going to send Jacob some stories. And then it was this horrible thing of this guy getting hit by a car. And then, oh, my God. I thought, ugh, do I need to see this just before going to bed? It came on. Like, ah. And then then another car hit the guy. And I thought, this has got to be like, not this is this isn't real. It actually happened in L.A. And it was this horrible story. I was going to send it to Jacob, but I didn't want to give him nightmares. Then I decided to read the story real quickly. How to make yourself have an LSD trip or something similar to it by using your cell phone. This is the other one where you can have your phone turn on and flash lights in your face. And if you do it correctly, the app will make you feel like you're tripping.
Yeah, this is an amazing story, and I'm pretty skeptical. So the writer says he started off skeptical, but he says, but it's a pretty darn effective. And so because we're going to talk about nightmares, we had you try to see something horrible right before you went to bed, so you could have a nightmare. Yeah. We also put Jacob through this particular ringer, and now he can tell us what it's like to have a strobe light effect on your consciousness and see if you can actually make yourself high.
Yeah. What did it do to you? Did it make you high there, Jacob? Huh? You're crazy now on the strobe light, are you?
I've not done some of the drugs that they're describing that this is similar to, so I can't speak to it directly in terms of how good it is, but I would say that it was something interesting. There were some interesting images, although I will also say, different to the guy that wrote this article, I feel like the experience wore off pretty quickly, where at some point you just kind of, get back into your own brain and you realize, my phone flashlight is just pointed at me and it is just strobing a little bit. But it was interesting for about a minute, I'd say.
And how long did it take you to get into that 1 minute of interesting space? 5 minutes?
Honestly, no. Right away, it was very quickly.
Really?
But then you're over it fairly quickly as well.
So a shallow experience, but an experience nonetheless.
I think that's how I would describe it. Yeah.
There you go. William Burroughs, I think, tried to come up with some sort of dream machine that would do the same sort of thing.
Yeah, I
remember
that's
that, Tom?
Right. Yes.
Wasn't he also the guy that shot the woman with the? Was it the?
Yes.
Shot the apple off the person's head.
Yep. Killed her
with
I
an
think.
Arrow. Killed her. Yeah.
His
Jacob,
wife.
Did that kind of thing happen to you when you were? With the arrow and the apple.
That was a nightmare. That wasn't the trip. That was the nightmare.
Okay. Where's my apple and my arrow?
It made me commit a murder. Did I not lead with that part?
Always bearing the lead.
Allegedly, right, Jacob?
Allegedly, Jacob. Allegedly. All right, Trey. All right, here we go. Is this thing you've been working on, Sean?
Oh, well, apparently you're going to talk about a man who was fined for farting on cops.
Oh, yes, yes.
And he's
arguing
that farts are a protected form of expression. So I was asked to spice up a bit of audio that you sent to Jacob.
Yes. Right, yes. Where did this happen, Tom? Was this in Australia?
Austria,
oh, boy.
So in Europe.
So he's talking to the police, and while the police are, I guess, questioning him, he proceeds to break wind, and then this becomes a case of, is it freedom of speech? Are you allowed to do that? Is it somehow offensive? Are you insulting or assaulting the police by breaking wind in their presence?
Yes. Farting on a police officer is apparently against the law in Austria, but it wasn't determined to be such until a judge actually ruled on this. And the defense, the guy who farted, his defense was, it's protected speech, that a fart is a form of expression. And the judge, I think, misread this or misjudged it, because he says, listen, I understand a burp or a fart can be socially inappropriate, but it is not communicative, which I think is ridiculous. I think a lot of things that aren't formulated in words are communicative, and I think... farting in someone's general direction can be seen as a very pointed comment, an expression, and I think he shouldn't have ruled as such.
I agree, and I sent this to Sean. I said, so Sean, could you please, so this is a scene from Dragnet, and that this could easily have been happening in, where was this, Austria?
Austria.
Can you tell us what you did today starting at noon, Granberg?
I don't know if I can or not. I don't keep a daily log, you know. They didn't tell me I had to do that.
Just tell us where you were between noon and six tonight. That's all we want.
Well, that's quite a bit, don't you think? Suppose I told you I was playing canasta with a maiden aunt. Would that shock you?
Look, mister, we're not in the mood for smart answers. You just tell us where you were, that's all.
I don't know why you always have to bother me every time something happens.
You're out of order, Your Honor. You're out of order.
Oh, that was so fun to create.
Sean,
what?
Sean.
What?
I said, lightly. I said, spice it up lightly. What was that last one? I'm surprised his intestines didn't come out.
Well,
just you. You
well, what you said, like, lightly, how Jacob described it to me was have it start off lightly and gradually get, you know, more intense. So that's what I did.
Boy, can the FCC come down on us for indecency here?
By the way,
it's a free speech, Tom. We have a First Amendment right.
Yeah,
that's right.
We're non-communicative. That scene from Dragnet, so that was a scene from Dragnet where there was a girl the body was found and she had been, you know, assaulted. And they went to this guy, and because he was a child, you know, oh my God, you watch that show, and it's like, wow, it is a timepiece, Tom. Have you ever watched, like, Dragnet now and seen how they talk to people and, stereotyping?
Just the fact
that guy
man.
He was a child, you know, he was like, he did something, some kid a while ago, or whatever. And guess what he does? He works in a bar in a saloon playing an organ. It's like, really? I mean, who wrote that? And that was him being questioned and breaking wind. Thank you, Sean. That's some of your best work today.
Oh, thanks.
The judge ruled that even if it was a form of expression, a fart transcends the boundaries of decency. And I think that's what our segment just did.
Can you tell us what you did today starting at noon, Granberg?
I don't know if I can or not. I don't keep a daily log, you know. They didn't tell me I had to do that.
Just tell us where you...
That's just so funny.
Take it away, Tracy.
I don't even know how to follow up with that one.
You don't need to.
Yeah.
You don't.
Okay,
that was not how I planned it. That was not how I planned it. I'm sorry,
got
Tracy.
It.
I'm very sorry.